And good morning once again, everyone. Well, it's Saturday morning. This is The Other Side of Midnight, another episode in the unending chapters of what is going on with this planet and do we all really belong here? My guest this morning, I will introduce shortly. I wanted to start, however, with a couple of political items so I can hear click, 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 click. Everyone's turning off their devices. By the way, apropos turning off your devices and the whole broadband thing, someone sent me an email which made me go, oh, how could I have been so dumb? It turns out that all these digital devices are equipped with what's called a timer, which means, you know, if you're listening to the show and you fall asleep, if your timer doesn't, which the robot should not do, the timer will very quietly turn the program off when it's given its orders to turn it off. That would help enormously because, again, the bandwidth charges are extraordinary. Obviously, we must be reaching a very large audience because otherwise, why would we have such large bandwidth charges? Kind of, you know, ergo demonstrasum or something like that. Okay, let me start at the top here with a story that I guess Art did earlier tonight. There is a news item circling the web at the speed of light plus. Did scientists just pick up the first intelligent radio waves from a distant alien planet? Now, do you notice this fits into the recent flurry of news stories on the Kepler mystery star, which, of course, NASA is now pushing back and saying, it's just comets, it's just comets. The cool part about the Kepler star is we're going to know. There's no way that NASA or anybody else can keep us from knowing if there's a huge one or two artificial habitats or something orbiting the Kepler star. Because with an eclipse percentage of something like 22% of the light vanishing, that's a really one good one, Oakland, vanishing from the data stream, that means that any amateur in the world, even with the naked eyeballs looking at the Kepler star over the next several months when Kepler is within view, when the star is within view between Cygnus and Lyra, of observers, amateurs all over the world, and they're all linked by the internet, and they all talk to each other, and they send images, and they send data, and they send spectrograms, and they send photometry, and they send all this cool stuff that only official observatories used to be able to do. So there is a flotilla, an army, whatever metaphor you want, of amateurs, totally uncensored, connected by social media all over the planet, who are looking at this star and who will tell us during a 20% eclipse, yep, there's something really weird going on. And of course, that will trigger, as the scientist that we had on the show a few weeks ago talking about this mystery confirmed to us, that will trigger a global professional effort. Major observatories, NASA and others, the Europeans, the Russians, the Japanese, anybody who's got a major telescope on a big mountain, including the Vatican. Remember the Vatican? We talked to them here, the former Vatican Observatory director. They will all swing these giant instruments, these tens of meters instruments, exquisite light buckets, toward the Kepler star, and they will record in exquisite detail things that the Kepler satellite, the Kepler telescope in orbit, was just too small to pick up, subtleties. Certainly the spectrograms, and as Andrew, the lead scientist at the SETI Institute, said on this air, there's a key prediction that if this thing is artificial, the eclipse will proceed to look gray, meaning it won't get bluer or redder. If, in fact, it's a cloud of comets and we're looking at a whole bunch of dust, which NASA now is pushing very hard as the explanation, we will see a reddened cloud, and the spectrographs will show a reddening of the sun, of the starlight of the Kepler star behind the comet cloud, and that will be a clear differentiating signal between an artificial thing and a natural cloud of gas and dust, i.e. the comet model. So, and it cannot be hidden, it cannot be censored, it cannot be kept from all the thousands of amateurs all over the world who are looking. So we're going to know in real time almost the answer to this one. Now, that's an example of citizen science, which is in the best of the traditions. Unfortunately, there is other citizen science, which is in the worst of traditions, because people see something they glom onto something on the web, and then they amplify it with their own analysis, which is not based by training or by having done any of this stuff. They just kind of think it's cool, and so they add to the noise. We're going to go through imaging tonight, seen on the web, that we know categorically, absolutely, phantasmagorically, is not alien artifacts or large rodents running around on the planet Mars. Then we're going to swing into the stuff that's real, and we got some really cool new real stuff to talk about. So my guests this morning are Keith Laney, who is a space imaging processing and anomaly specialist from Charlotte, North Carolina. We have on board tonight Robert Harrison. It's morning, actually, over in Burlingham. Do I pronounce that right, Robert? Burlingham?
Never heard it pronounced that way before.
Oh, okay.
Birmingham and things like that, but usually just Birmingham.
Birmingham, okay.
Or Birmingham or something like that, yeah.
So Bob is an investor and apparently has achieved everything he wanted in his financial dream, so he's been able to retire and devote mostly full-time to this amazing discovery and discovery process. As a child of the space age, Bob was fascinated by space exploration, as we all were, and this is what it's turned into. He winds up appearing nightly almost on the other side of midnight. My next guest this morning is Andrew Curry. Andrew is an artist. Andrew is also, he's worked for large and small Canadian companies. Over the past decade, he's been working as a storyboard artist and a concept illustrator in the film and television industries. And he has done another one of his amazing sketches to illustrate a key point that Keith Laney is going to talk about earlier in the show. And last but not least, Will Farrer is with us. Will is in Maryland. He's had a technology career most of his young life. He's very much on the side of young at the moment. And actually will probably live to see all this stuff being common knowledge, and he'll be seeing statues raised with his name on it and all that, so having done the work. Now, Alan Sturm, our industrial and architectural designer, is supposed to be with us. Apparently, the other commitment that he said was possibly going to intervene has intervened, but we've got his bio up there just so you don't forget that he's also a member of the team. So let me begin with you, Will. The thing that actually triggered this show was a conversation that you and Keith and I had about all the fake stuff which is running around the web and going viral and, you know, getting hundreds of thousands of hits, and it's not real. It's so not real, it's not funny. So why don't you start with link number two and take us through the never-never land of fakery and ignorance in terms of alien artifacts and archaeology on the World Wide Web.
All right. Well, good morning, Richard. Good morning, everybody. Excited to be here as always, especially to talk about this subject because it's with what I do. It's to fight for a couple thousand hits sometimes is amazing. But when you get some of these new, I guess we can call them artifacts that we're finding, like a new rodent, small rodent. If you're looking at the second image from the radio with pictures here, the second number down, rock resembling a small rodent.
Let me interrupt and tell everybody how to get here. OtherSideOfMidnight.com, that's the homepage, OtherSideOfMidnight.com. Go to the upper right-hand corner where it says Radio with Pictures. Click on that. That takes you to tonight's guest page. Just scroll down. Look for link number two. Will, back to you.
All right, this is the same. It takes you to Daily Mail. This is the same website that picked up that coffin on Mars I told you I admitted that I had done in the past and labeled the box that was out there, a coffin, and that took off and has been used against us now in the anomaly, almost war, you got to call it, because these people really, like, if you look here, we're looking at a very pixelized image, of course. And it does look like a generalized, if you see the circled piece down here, if you scroll down, it does generally look like a big blob that could be a mouse, an outline of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the guy, this is actually a friend of mine on the web, that Alien Art TV, that put this out.
Joe White. From Bristol.
Yeah, he...
Since he knows it's not a mouse, why is he calling it a mouse and leading everybody off over the cliff like lemmings to die a horrible death in non-alien artifact land?
You know, I don't know. And I've had to, like, I was very liberal when I first started. And he's also getting his channel first started. And I had to rein myself in with my titles and how I presented things. I speak in all my videos. I didn't get a chance to watch his actual video about it, but most people know if you watch my video, I say, "Oh, that little rock feature looks like a mouse."
Have you noticed the disproportionate number of small terrestrial rodents that are running around on Mars? If we believe these NASA images,
it's amazing, and I think we're either getting set up to be told that there. A lot of people will take that. To say like these rodents, especially like we had the gopher on Mars, we've had the other iguana on Mars. They're using it to say, well, the rover's not on Mars. It's all a scam. It's all a fakery. And what's leading these other, there's a whole other group now, people who are believing the flat earth theory are coming out now. And it's starting to mush all of this stuff together into this real pot of you know, what's real and what's not. And then we have what happened in the third link, if we want to go down show you the third link from, if we go back to the radio with pictures.
Okay.
We had this new stadium on Mars.
This is now link number three in radio with pictures.
You got it. And this leads us to misinterpretations of things and people running with them. And
as opposed to outright fakery, this is an example of how even honest investigators, if they're not really familiar with the technology, can misinterpret a simple engineering view for something that's wonderfully engineering on Mars, and that's not the case here.
Exactly. And if you look at the article, this is brings you to whatsupinthesky.com, my website. You'll see there's a sample article there. We don't have to open. I basically have the image it's shown. And they say this is a stadium and megastructures on Mars. Of course, if you know anything about the Opportunity rover, if you keep scrolling down, in the first image you see what was posted on the website showing the buildings, which look like buildings.
Oh, they sure do. Incredibly convincing.
Very convincing. And I've been fooled by this at first, too, when I first started. First thing I did was I went to the Opportunity website, of course, and checked other images from that same camera and realized that this was a valid thing that happens. And if you keep scrolling down in it, uh-huh. You can read if people who like to read the article later, they can. Here's is a basically from that same HazCam, rear HazCam. That's
now remember, the HazCams are the hazard cameras. They're mounted under like a skirt, like the rover's wearing a hat, and they're sitting under this deck, and they're looking out with very wide angle. You can see the curve of the horizon. Mars is not that curved when you're sitting on the surface, so obviously it's a very wide-angle lens, a hazard camera. That's what HazCam means. There are two of them on the left and the right side of the spacecraft. Are there actually four overall, two in the front, two in the back?
I do believe on it here. I know on Curiosity Rover there was two. I think there are two on this one. One that looks down more, one that looks up. But I may be wrong on that, Richard. Keith would most likely know that right off the top of his head.
Okay, well, but Keith wants to send me a note. Oh, Andrew's writing and Scott's writing and Keith's not writing. Okay, so we will find that out. So please continue.
If you watch it roll off the actual pad here, you can see above it the same buildings that you see in the other image below. And what happens is with the curvature lens is trying the HazCam.
That's a mirrored surface up there.
Yeah.
And it's got like brackets and mechanical connectors and fasteners, and they're all really tiny because they're just a few inches in front of the camera.
Yep, they're solar panels, and basically it's the camera's trying to grab as much area as it can because it's the computer's using it to basically navigate in many ways along with the other cameras and try not to destroy the thing as it goes along. So it leaves that top half there, and you can see the reflection from the actual panel itself. It's just a solar panel. You can see the wires up in the top. The top middle one, you can really see the wires coming through that one. But over the years, this is what they look like when they got there. And even now, 11 years later, they don't look too bad.
They're tucked up under this rim. So they're basically looking down on the camera. The wide-angle lens is catching them basically above the camera. But it's all exactly. It's all scrunched down because of the foreshortening of a wide-angle lens.
So now if you go down, this is just a couple more for the people who still aren't. Because what happens is somebody sees that first picture, and they're like, whoa, that is amazing. That is, their mind automatically thinks Mars building. We're just kind of, as humans, I think we're prone to see something, and what we see with our own eyes, we take it to heart, really to heart. And I've had to, you know, run some people's days on this one a couple times with this. Some of my buddies at the Mars Moon Space Photo Zoom Club. If you look down the next image, this is right from NASA. There's a link that's on the website if you want to look at that later.
This is the diagram?
It is a diagram of the cameras there. So mm-hmm. I guess there is only one HasCam there, it looks like.
Well, there's one facing front and one facing rear.
Yeah, exactly. You got the front and the rear, and then you got your pan cams and your nav cams up to the top where you get the more above images, which is – and if you keep scrolling down, you can take an actual look at the things you're seeing there. This is before we sent it off. You see everybody's in their suits, and they don't want to get it in a very – they don't want to destroy it with our bacteria before we send it there. But you can see the actual pieces. I've drawn some arrows.
Look at how foreshortened those things are in the actual image. And they also look smaller at the bottom than at the top, giving you the stadium effect.
So when they drop, and if they're on that little bit of an angle, you see it, and it surely does. It's a very manipulating image. Like I say, it manipulates your mind. It gives an optical illusion. That's another one that comes up. Not just this researcher. This has probably come up about 5 or 6 times.
Oh, yeah. I dismissed it early on, but these, for some reason, look different, so I had to kind of do a double look, you know.
It was the hill, because when you have another hill kind of messing with the image, the optical illusion really gets – it really hones in. And like I said, this is one that I've emailed. The guy who put the stuff out to begin with is he was a subscriber of mine. I asked him, you know, this is what it is. At least please mark it as debunked, as I do with my videos, or delete it.
This is the infamous Mr. Joe White.
No, it's another guy who does it.
Oh, that's right. Joe White does mice.
Yeah, he did. He moves a lot of stuff. And there are a lot of people who believe that things are on Mars walking alive. I haven't found evidence. I try and use every camera. If I was going to say that there was really a rat on Mars, I would have looked at all the other cameras too, not just taking one shot. Because if we really do take a good panorama of each image from each camera on Curiosity now. So I would imagine that didn't move, you know, and it was just a rock. So, and that's one thing that I think we talked about here on your show a little bit back, and a whole bunch of us have been talking about making some sort of checklist of how what's an anomaly, was not an anomaly.
Well, you know, when I see something like the mouse, I really wonder if somebody at JPL is inserting these things, because there's too many things that look too good to be just that horrible word I hate, pareidolia, which means that you see something that looks familiar, and then you project all the other attributes on it. It's just a random collection of stuff, but you make it in your mind look like something you're familiar with, i.e., you know, familiar little furry rodents running around on a place, of course, you'd always expect them, Mars. I mean, there is a kind of a big non sequitur in that logic chain.
And if you go, it seems like these are the ones that go viral. I don't know if it's just a human instinct for these things to go viral, or if it's actually being pushed. And I'm doing as much research as I can into who and how and why, and because there's got to be a science behind how these are going viral and why they're going viral that ties in to the whole disclosure.
Well, in a world where you can't really censor a lot of things anymore because there's too many people looking, the only way you can censor is by clogging up the intelligence channels, the information channels, and giving people so much noise to wade through that the signal will never be picked up, because they just won't know, you know, what's real and what's not real, which is why we have to kind of teach people, and tonight's partly in response to the idea that we have to do this, how do you tell real artifacts from the fake ones? What are the criteria? What are the scientific steps that you go through to eliminate fake stuff from real stuff?
I like how it's labeled. Keith, did you have something to say there? You were going to add something?
Yeah, I kind of did. If I've noticed that it's the website that you linked for this mouse picture, the weekly news, whatever that UK weekly, whatever, that's one of them that pushes a lot of these articles like this. If you look, they're always caveated in the screen with the pareidolia article.
Okay, absolutely. These
are straw men. They're picking out straw men out of the anomalies that people are finding, and it's mostly just it's like you're talking about, Will. It's your friends. It's my friends. It's all of us. People are just looking at something and go, "Hey, look, this looks like a something." Next thing you know, they get a hold of it and they blast it out and they put their little pareidolia article beside it, and it's a straw man. They use it as a straw man. They don't pick the good stuff. Now, we just showed them a great big huge pyramid. We've been showing them great big huge pyramids, city blocks, everything like this on Mars. Where's that media coverage showing that?
Zero. None. Zip.
Right. So that tells you right now, this is a psyop. It's a psyop. It's not necessarily the fault of the people that are finding the stuff. They're just doing what comes natural to us all and looking at the images and finding things. Okay. I mean, I'm not averse to saying, hey, and I've looked at the images from Pathy and I saw a rodent in those. Now, was it a rodent? Was it a rodent? Nah, sure not. But it sure is fun to think it might be. You know, but for the media to run with it and then to straw man it with the pareidolia article. That's beyond reproach to me.
And it trickles from these little. This is a fairly big article. This is a medium sized place, but then it trickles into the mainstream. Well, Huffington Post will pick this up next. Then it'll end up on your local news. It's happened. I saw it happen with the coffin video I did. It went so viral. The thing got over a million hits in one day. But I have another two pictures under here that I think that people have been emailing me. Have you got to show Hoagland? You got to show Hoagland. You know, that actually show a much better, you know, anomaly. And there, you might be right there. They might be just cherry picking these things and using them. But once they get to that level, it's a roller coaster. And you're right. They always have that box.
Well, we know it. You know as well as I do. We've discussed this recently, like the crab anomaly that everybody – there was a big fad not long ago. It showed what looked like a crab going up into a hole in the side of a rock formation. And it was the picture that – they strawmanned like this was totally photoshopped. The legs were painted in with dark areas. And you know what the bad thing about it is this was a really good anomaly. Now, I don't want to touch it. No one wants to touch it because it's been disqualified like that.
That's obviously the PSYOP's objective.
They did the same thing with the wheel too. There's a wheel some Curiosity images. We got it. It's wonderful. It looks like an old rusted wheel.
Did you see the one with the axle?
They painted it and make it look like a probe and saying, "Oh look, we found a defunct space probe on Mars," and it's in the mainstream media like this. It's the same. It's one of these little straw man stories. But in this case, it's even more heinous because they take decent anomalies and totally disqualify them by painting them up and saying it's a. This and putting it in the news with the pareidolia article.
Yep. Robert, I don't know whether we have Robert here. Can Robert say something if
yes,
he's here?
Yes.
Oh, you are back. Okay.
My computer has crashed twice while Will was speaking.
Okay. Well, we will say the appropriate signs for it. Will, take us to image number 4.
All right, now this is one that came from my website, my YouTube videos. This was one that a lot of people had said, you got to show Richard. It's from a Curiosity Rover mass camera shot, which is the camera that's on the top. If you look at the Curiosity Rover, it looks like it's got a little head on it that can swivel around. And if you
like the robot in Short Circuit.
Yeah, exactly.
And Short Circuit too.
That's exactly how it looks. And you can see that straight in the middle of it, here's a very interesting anomaly.
Gosh, look at that. Wow.
I mean, it's just the 90-degree angles on it. It looks like it was a box or something at one time. It's half filled with sand. But that's something like that.
And it's got a dark interior, so it's got an interior, which is in shadow because the sun is coming from pretty much directly overhead. And it's got three right angles, and actually it's got six because, you know, the interior, you know, you're looking at the edge. Like it was a, maybe not a box, maybe a manufactured cylinder of something, but it's open on one side. We're seeing shadows, and you got two color versions, the normal, which you find on the JPL website, and then above it, the enhanced, which has not been over-enhanced, by the way.
Yeah, I really didn't do much to it other than hit the auto color just to bring it down into kind of our tone of color. And there's the website that's down there. If you go to my website, this was one of the last videos I've done. If you want to actually type in the NASA thing to get the original yourself, there's other parts of it that are interesting. If you want to go back to number five here, this is another one. And I did just get a note from one of my friends that said, Joe, in the video, Joe White did say that he thinks it's just a rock. And this is something, if we go back just a little bit to two, that seems to be happening as well. When people are writing articles about our videos,
going back to two,
when they're writing articles about us, and they're kind of putting more fanatical approaches on it when they get picked up in the lower level. So it really makes sense what Keith said there about the straw man thing. It really did. So I just wanted to
to raise the noise level so nobody can figure this out.
And then something like this doesn't go viral. You know, I think that's a very interesting anomaly. Number four we looked at.
Let's look at number five.
Yeah, let's look at number five.
This radio kinda... with pictures, scroll down, link number five. Oh my gosh, Will, this is amazing.
Look at this thing just sitting there.
Any idea of the scale?
It's pretty big. It's on the top of a hill. I wish I would have sent over the original links in link form, not just in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on the bottom there. Remember the pyramid from last show we had that was kind of on top of the hill? This mm-hmm. is the same way. This is a hilltop. I named the video Hilltop Artifact.
Hey, Keith, you know what this reminds me of?
What's that?
All the exquisite artwork in Disney's John Carter.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like a new, old structure.
Well, you know, that movie struck me because of that architecture. That's
They took it directly from the images.
Yeah.
You know, John Carter, you know, I'm going to do a whole show with some secret folks who actually got into Disney and got the backstory. I'm going to do a whole show night.
Hey, buddy, I love you.
Yes, we love you too, Scott.
No, I'm sorry, the bird was – I was trying to calm the bird. You're freaking him out with this rodent talk.
That's why you have to mute. Anyway, so we're going to have a whole crew on from Disney to talk about John Carter from Mars, where they dropped the from Mars. But yes, Keith, it's like you can take those images, those stunning images, particularly when they're making the trek across the desert on the thoats, and you can see side by side the real Martian ruins of the same era, you know, and there are successive epochs of ruins, and we're looking at a newer ruin here, which again appears to be incredibly old, but not as old as the oldest stuff, the big stuff.
I've seen a lot of destroyed stuff on Mars going through, and this was one of the objects that caught my eye. It has something in front of the disc piece in the front that looks like it's on some sort of a platform. It comes down, there's tubing in it, and it comes down. You can even see the shadow under the pieces that come down.
Well, look at that platform it's sitting on. You see all that geometry and the shadowing? That's obviously 3D. It's obviously got layers or floors. It may have partially collapsed, but this whole thing looks like a complex sitting up on the top where you'd want a view if, in fact, this thing is... Who knows? Maybe it's a fort. Maybe it was an ancient, you know, high-tech fort. Again, go ahead.
That's what I say. One thing I say in my videos, it's like, I see what I see, you see what you see. And really, there's so much geometry in these things, it's hard for me to see why this stuff doesn't make it into those pictures or why this is the stuff. So this is stuff I really want to get out. And even if you look in the front, in the middle, just directly in the middle of the enhanced one, you right in front of that piece on the ground there is a piece that runs straight across, and there's a circle around it. And that just piece of geometry right there alone would just blew my mind. I was like, I've got to show this one. Has got to be one of the ones I'm going to show Richard. And I know we got a lot to get to today, and we're coming up on the half hour.
Yeah, we're definitely at the bottom of the hour. So why don't we all hold it there? In honor of tonight, I thought we would bring back Clive Wright, and we would listen to the Queen of Sidonia. Everyone, all over the world, you're on two planets tonight, Earth, all over this one, people listening in various interesting places, including, we know from the emails, Singapore, and Moscow, and Paris, Tokyo, and beyond. You're on the other side of midnight, here on a gorgeous waning gibbous moon and land of enchantment. My name's Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. We are back with my guests of the morning, Keith Laney, Andrew Curry, Will Farrer, Bob Harrison, and we're missing Alan, but Alan had another commitment, and obviously it was more interesting than us, so we will get by. Okay, Andrew, you made a point in the break that I thought was important to bring out.
Yeah, hi Richard, hi everybody. It was a conversation that you and Christopher Knowles had the other night about people feeling they need permission
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I know, like, with this fuss over the false anomalies, and I agree with you guys that you have to straighten people out. But I think the healthy thing here is that people are looking. The unfortunate side of it, like Keith, like what you said, is, you know, mainstream tries to grab the most flimsy of evidence and then blows that up out of proportion. Whereas, like you said, with the DMN pyramid and all that stuff, where's all that information coming? But I just think it's a healthy thing that people feel like they can make these kinds of observations, even if they might be kind of a little bit, you know, uneducated, which, Richard, means that we have to have. You know what's coming.
Yes, I do.
But, you know, educating people how to see things, I think, is an important piece here. So we're doing that.
That's what we're trying to do. And that's a perfect segue for Mr. Harrison, far across the pond. Go for it.
Morning, Richard. Well, if we go to click on 6 and 7.
Well, we can only do it one at a time, so let's click on 6 first.
Okay. Yes.
Radio with pictures, folks. And then you can click on it again, and it makes it much bigger.
That's right.
I know what that is.
Yes, well, last time we all met, we were looking at the very high-res images of the DNM pyramid and seeing it all in its shattered close-in glory. So these 6 and 7 are just to remind us that when we zoom out, it's a very geometrical formation or arcology. So the top images just show as it appears in your book, The Monument of Mars, and the
This is number 6.
This is 6. So this is the geometry we're used to in the Monument to Mars book. So it was aligned. So it was a pentagon aligned northwards. And then when we had the Mars Odyssey imagery, we realized that there was another geometry, a floor plan geometry, that pointed more the pentagon pointing southerly. And this was very geometric indeed. So as we go down to the, you know, this very strong bilateral symmetry, as we can see with the...
you mean the third image down in your strip?
Third image down, yes.
Where it says the new 2001 Mars Odyssey geometry.
That's right, yes. So the white line shows the line of symmetry. And
That's eerie. That is so damn eerie.
And it shows this this platform extension to the north of it, which sort of mimics the north facet of the DNM pyramid. And then below that, left and right sides flipped. This is something from an animation that Mark Colotto did. We can see when you've just flip the image left to right, it's practically looks the same.
Well, so, with distortions caused by Keith's big wave, I really think that Keith's right about this, that there was a huge tsunami that came through town and didn't leave much standing.
We'll except, have more on that later, too.
Except for the big ones. All right. Continue,
Robert. So that sort of shows that there is a great deal of symmetry in the DNM.
Incredible symmetry.
And then at the bottom, I'm just comparing the roughly, not with any great accuracy of drawing, the Viking orbiter floor plan that we saw in the Monument of Mars, and then comparing it with this Mars Odyssey floor plan. So there's two, intrinsic geometries, different geometries in there. The Viking floor plan geometry links in with other anomalies in Cydonia. So, the northern ridge points towards the face, the northeastern one points towards the Solus formation peak, and the northwest ridge on the Viking floor plan points towards the center of the city mounds and the city square.
And that kind of geometry, again, if you really want to know how to do this, folks, geometry, geometry, geometry. Nature does not produce this kind of symmetry, regular geometry, or alignment geometry over and over and over again in a very small area.
So if we click back to the other side of Midnight Page.
Okay, radio with pictures.
And go to image number 7.
All right, this is all the DNM now, upside down. From this our is usual. The, yes. Click on it, it makes it bigger.
Right, this is a diagram that Mark Colotto produced at the very top, trying to see what the internal geometry of the Mars Odyssey floor plan might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I've slightly amended this, and found that the DNM seems to, the DNM seems to be circumscribed by a square outline, and that the peak is at the center of that square. So that's the second diagram.
Mm, fascinating. Very much like, what's his name, Vitruvius Man.
Mm, yes. So if we go down to the third image, which is DNM proportion to the square, what I found is that...
Oh, look at that.
That four of the corners of the DNM pyramid are proportionate to a length of 1/4 of that length of that square.
Hmm.
And of course, the top one.
Oh, that's completely random and coincidental, Robert. Come on, why are you wasting our time with this bizarre looking symmetrical geometry, which is there on Mars and no one wants to pay attention to?
Well, obviously, it's not worth a second look, is it? So
nope. Again, the numbers, the geometry. That's the only way you can figure out the fake stuff from the real stuff.
And the fourth one, I think we're on to the fourth one. This is the one with the yellow triangles.
Oh, nice.
Now, this, basically, the DNM seems to be made out of only two types of triangles. The east and west facets seem to be basically a square cut diagonally in half. And then the north and the eastern... don't know how you describe them, but as you can see, they seem to be the same triangle, just aligned differently.
Yeah, and we should say that these images have been flipped over 180 degrees so that north is at the bottom of the image.
That's right, yes, yeah. And then the pattern of four-sided shapes just shows that there's basically two types of four-sided shapes there. The yellow is just 90 degrees rotation, and of course half in the blues just showed that those facets are half squares.
So you're suspecting there's more interesting mathematical coding in this geometry and the projection from 3D down to 2D?
Yes, because we're looking at a 2D floor plan here, not the 3D elevation of the sides. The final one just shows that quarter length proportions of the corners lead to particular rectangles when you join the four corners.
And how can you get that symmetry out of a random mountain eroded by God knows what forces on Mars over millions of years? You can't.
if I remember correctly, there's I think a 3x4 and a 2x3 rectangle in there. But there is an article on my website which explains all this.
And your website is linked up at your bio.
That's right. Yes, SidoniaQuest.com. So if we go back to Radio of Pictures,
okay,
and going to be talking a lot about about arcology ruins in Cydonia this morning. So if we click on eight,
number eight,
and enlarge,
and then you can click on it again, makes it bigger.
So this is examples around the monuments area of Cydonia of centrally collapsed mounds.
Okay, your first image is a color image from the Mars Express cameras on the Mars Express European satellite orbiting Mars.
That's right. So the blue image in the top corner, the blue circle, is the first image. I've called this the Island Fort. It's a very low-lying, triangular-shaped mesa. And at one end, you've got this long, hollowed-out fort-like structure. So it seems to have had a collapsed center. So it's a suggestion of that this has started out as a hollow, but a weaker center, and it's either eroded down or collapsed down, which we'd expect from an arcology. There's an image below that doesn't cover all of it, but this is from the Mars Global Surveyor, which shows more detail. So I think I've asked for this, and I know Robert Williams has, to be imaged by HiRISE, and it will be very interesting to see.
On the MRO spacecraft, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter.
That's right.
Which is the one that basically has the super high-res telescope pointed down looking at Mars instead of up looking at the sky.
And that's what we got the DNM pictures from this time. So the red circled formation, this is
up in the top picture on this strip now.
Yes. This is a second object. And these are two Mars Global Surveyor images. Okay. Not fantastic. But as you can see, the center of this,
Is this the one called the Collapsed Pyramid?
Collapsed Mesa, yes.
Mesa, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So this was probably started off as pretty flat topped, but the center is eroded or collapsed down.
There's no way to know if it didn't have a peak. Remember, the pyramids geometrically in the physics are really important. The reason everybody on Mars is living in these huge pyramids is because the physics demands they have to live in a huge pyramid, because we've measured the pyramid amplifies by its geometry and its composition the background torsion field. And a high torsion field is better for living longer and with medical problems non-existent than living without the high background field, which is why they lived in huge pyramids on Mars. At least that's what our model says.
And although these images aren't very good, they're very low resolution by MGS standards. Mm. There is hints that there's a lot of honeycombing in that interior and along the edge of it.
Gosh, what did these look like when they were new? They would have been breathtaking. House like a mountain built. The Ecours. House like a mountain built.
Right. In the bottom, the top image, the bottom left-hand corner, there's a yellow circled.
See it?
Mound, yep. So that's the very bottom one.
The unnamed centrally collapsed mound, you call it.
I've just called it, you've run out of names. So this is just an example of a less geometrically centrally collapsed mound in Cydonia, and there are more of these things around when you search around in the MRO's context images, which cover the whole of Cydonia now at a fairly low resolution. So enough to pick out anomalies.
Where are we looking on the radio with pictures?
We're on at the moment. We're still on number 7.
Okay, 7 or 8?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, I think you were on 8. At the very bottom, the unnamed.
Yes, we're
collapse.
On 8. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, very bottom one.
Okay. So Tempest is fugiting. Continue.
Right, back to
radio 9. With pictures.
And if we click on 9 and enlarge it.
Clicking on 9, enlarging. Oh, that's cool.
Right, we go right to the bottom. Just show where this
all
is.
All the way to the bottom. People.
Yep. We can see the Cydonia city.
Super Bowl City?
Yes,
Who named this Super Bowl City? You're supposed to be in Britain. What do you mean, yes, Super Bowl City, Robert? Come on.
Well, the actual... just need a little drink here, excuse me.
No problem. Yes, talking on the radio.
The actual mound just looked like an upturned pudding bowl to me, so I called it the Super Bowl. Okay.
So this is basically on the northern side of that ancient ocean that we've always thought, you know, was water in between. And this is what Keith and I are calling Greater Cydonia.
Yes, well, it's even greater than what I'm going to cover here.
Mm-hmm.
So that bottom picture shows where it is in relation to the more familiar Cydonia city. So the thing about the Super Bowl mound is, if you look particularly around the southern edge of it there, you can see how there's active walled moating going along. This is where the outer edge remains, but behind it, the mound is actually subsiding downwards.
Mm.
And so you end up with this moat, but with a wall on the outside. And so within the arcology theory, this is evidence that there's hollowness in there and that we're getting subsidence.
Andrew just pointed out that they're playing NFL football in the UK these days. Yes, horrors. Oh, my God.
Hi, Bob. Bob, I tried to get a hold of you before the show. The Super Bowl mound up here, I have a high-rise image that I ordered and received a couple years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
That goes right through the, and covers half of that. And
yes.
It's pretty stunning. It's the collapsed side that's on your image. It would be the bottom part of it.
Yep.
It clearly gets half of this area.
Yeah,
and it shows honeycombing, right?
Oh, yes. It has all kinds of stuff up in there. We're time limited, but I wish I would have been a little more prepared for it.
For next time. Robert?
Yes, I've seen that image. Thanks, Keith. And I'll email you back about that image you want to send me. Yes, the MRO image that catches the formation you call the Roadrunner does catch about the western third of the Super Bowl, and it has some very interesting anomalies on it. So there's a close-up of that subsidence. You know, you can see it's all crumbling downwards.
That's in the second image down in your strip.
Yes. The MGS could have captured this in much higher resolution than it did, which is quite interesting. And then there's a coloured image just showing that there seems to be a 5 walled support structure supporting this, like the DNM.
Very similar to the DNM, yeah.
Going by the ridge lines and the less eroded upper areas.
Mm.
So if we go back to radio of pictures.
Okay.
Go in 10.
Clicking on 10.
Right, and enlarge. So yep. the top image there is the Super Bowl city, or the southern part of it, from Mars Express. Probably can pick out the Super Bowl mound. Now, on the far left, there's another mound, which MGS took a pretty good image of. So the western mound of Super Bowl city, which has the red arrow.
And that's the one in black and white just below it, then?
Yes.
That's a pyramid.
Sure.
That's a four-sided pyramid with the northeast side gone.
Yeah. As you can see, the eastern side, the right-hand side, just seems to have had the whole side chambers.
Looks like possible more major tsunami action.
Collapsed in. And the interesting thing is the wall, it's got the wall, remaining wall around the eastern side, but it's like the hull of the Titanic. It's double-walled.
Right.
Which can be, the image below, that's in green, that's double wall.
Oh, the green overlay shows the geometry of that double wall. Look at that.
Yes,
that's got to go on for a mile or so.
Yeah, well, I think the whole thing is actually about, the whole mound is about two-thirds of a mile, so it's slightly smaller than the face.
Okay, half a mile.
And there's some interesting straight line wall features in there in red. There's an interesting purple eroding area. And the blue sort of outlines, they're showing sort of depressions on the outside of the wall, which seem to be like mirroring what's going on in the inside, collapsed area of the pyramid. So there might be... there might be underground parts of this pyramid that go outside its surface perimeter.
God, what it would be great to have a rover on the surface that actually took pictures of things that were interesting.
And if we go back to the top, the larger image.
Okay.
There's a little black arrow, and that's just pointing to where you've got this honeycombing. So room-like.
Oh, yes, I can see. Oh, an MRO image would be stunning of this.
It would, wouldn't it?
Do we know of any that exist, Keith?
No, they don't exist at present, but they're all ordered. I've got the whole area blanketed. Robert Williams has several of these other items that I don't have covered. We've got them all ordered. We're just waiting on them to send them to us.
Robert, number 11?
Yes, number 11.
Radio with pictures, click on number 11.
Right, this is something I've asked MRO, NASA, to have a high-rise image of.
Mm-hmm.
And this is taken from its context camera images.
Now, just for folks that may have joined us late, we're on othersideofmidnight.com. Click on the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That takes you to Radio with Pictures. Scroll down. We're on link number 11 now. And then you double-click on it once you get it up, and it pops up big on the screen. These all are amazingly collapsing ancient arcologies, all in this greater Sidonia region.
Right. So if people have got the enlarged image up, if they just go to the third image, this just shows where it is.
Sidonia, kind of wide-angle view. Oh, it's way over there to the west, way west of the classic Sidonia city.
Sidonia Colleges. Yes.
Yeah, it's probably about 10 miles away. And you see the DMM pyramid, the face, the Sidonia city. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively close. So we go back up to the top image. Okay. As you can see, you're getting these side collapses into you're getting these bowl like collapses. On the western side, you're getting a walled moat forming. On the eastern side, where it's less washed out by light, you can see there's at least three depressions on the southeast facet there. And the top one, if we scroll down to the second image, there seems to be structure in there.
Oh my God, they're really, and this is Surveyor. This is Global Surveyor. It's not the high-rise.
No. This is the context camera of MRO, so it's low resolution, very fuzzy.
Do we remember how different the resolution is on that context camera?
The context camera. These images are generally six meters per pixel. It's MGS resolution, but they're great, big, huge, wide images.
That's 30 feet per pixel.
Yeah, but I mean that's good for spotting these arcologies. They don't hide. You know,
Look at that amazing geometry. That has to be huge structural geometry.
I have this. I have these that you're that we're pointing out here. Mm-hmm. I have these targeted and ordered on high rise as well.
Okay.
Yes, I've asked for it to be imaged, and some school kids in Scotland asked for it to be imaged as well.
Mm.
Although by the time it is imaged, I think they'll have gone through university and be in the workforce.
At the rate of which, well, actually, the requests and responses might be accelerating.
Hopefully.
That will be one of the tests to see what...
It's a feedback loop. The more you participate, the more you get back.
Okay.
And if we scroll down...
Do we call this the squeaky wheel theory of image processing?
Yeah, I mean, when you order these pictures, you have to justify why you want to see them. Mm-hmm. And I will just lay it out for them myself. Hey, look, it's a pyramid. Please take a picture of it. Do you want to solve this issue? Do you want it to always be up in the air?
That's an exquisite approach, because you understand what you're doing, Keith, don't you, by saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, tell everybody what you're doing.
I'm opening the door for them to be open with us.
You're infecting the system from the inside. For folks that may have looked at this and thought it's just rocks, when a request like that comes in, you know they can't not look.
Everyone I've ever talked in within the agency that has given me pictures or ordered, you know, been in the programs that various programs I've been in have all been upstanding, great people.
Mm. Okay, guys, hold it right there, Robert. We're going to have you do a summation here. When we come back from the other side of the break, my guests this morning are, and not in any particular order, Keith Laney, Andrew Curry, Will Farrer, Bob Harrison, and you're on the other side of midnight. My name's Richard C. Hoagland, and let's let Clive take us out again. He wrote a piece which is so haunting to what we're looking at, The Queen of Sidonia. We'll be right back. We are back on the other side of midnight. Robert, please continue.
Right.
We were looking close up at image link 11 in Radio with Pictures.
Right. If we just scroll down to the immediate locality image, which I think is image 4 on that, we can just see the immediate locality of that arcology candidate. And the nearby four-sided, possibly four-sided arcology ruin, which I've marked out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very bottom image is comparing this candidate with the East or City Mound in the Sidonia city by way of comparison. And it's it's pretty similar. You know, you've got.
We're talking about your arcology candidate in the upper image, in the immediate locality image. Then we're looking at the bottom image of the Eastern Mound in the familiar Sidonia City region.
Yes, and you've got that sort of walled moat on the western side. It's got lots of satellite mounds.
Satellite mounds, which are each arcologies, of course. I mean, the scale of this stuff is miles. This is like a mile. These are not tiny. These are huge. And they're very old. Guys, do you want to spend a moment here speculating as to the sequence of stuff we're seeing?
Well, all this stuff has the same general style about it. If you look at them, the mounds, they have the satellite mounds, the moats, like they were built up, hollowed inside, and then what was on the top is collapsed down inside of it.
So let me ask the question here: why, if Mars used to have an atmosphere, clouds, running water, streams, oceans, if it was another Earth? Why would you have to build arcologies of this size to maintain a population inside when you could go for a walk outside any day of the week?
Well, it could just be that they were surrounded by such a dense city. This was space saving.
Okay, that's one possibility.
I know that's a very weak idea.
Also, this was all ocean. This was all pretty much ocean and coastline. And a lot of these, you see them on, like on an island, like the four-sided arcology on the fourth image. Mm-hmm. It's on a platform. A lot of the, we'll find it as we go on with the show. I'll show a lot more of those because they are literally littering the area.
Okay, I want to get to that. So, Robert, you want to wrap up or do you want to go to Pluto for some comparisons?
We'll wrap up. We'll go to Pluto. Because we're a bit short of time. Now, I think we...
Link number 12, radio with pictures.
I think we covered this one, this article, the idea of large parts of Pluto being covered by a geometric 3D pattern. So if people just scroll down to figure 2, so we're just sort of reminding ourselves what was on the far side of Pluto from the flyby. And we have, you know, in the close-up, we can see it's like a city of arcologies, but which are all joined up.
It's a huge amount of geometry. It's like wall-to-wall geometry all over that hemisphere of Pluto. The one we didn't fly by close.
And what's Pluto? It's about, is it 1,800 or 1,200 miles across?
1,500,
So really huge. So we quickly just scroll through all of them, and we can see how it actually, at the in figure 3, how it actually sort of spreads over onto the, a bit onto the...
Did you hear the other day someone was calling for a mission that would go and orbit Pluto?
Let's hope so.
Well, we'd have to get there a lot quicker than the 9 years it took for New Horizons. So, anyway, where are we going next?
If we go back to
Radio 13, with Pictures?
Yes, and we click on 13. I don't know if we discussed this or not. My memory's a bit faint.
That doesn't matter. Redundancy is important.
Right. Well, if we go down to figure 1.
Okay.
We've got Keith Laney's Arcology Row.
Those are amazing.
And that's
these things are in such much better condition than the stuff on Mars.
So quite a bit of internal compartmentation there.
Geometry,
oblongs, that kind of thing. And if we scroll down... just shows where Ecology Row is, and we can see Norgay Mountains and Hillary Mountains all around that western side of Sputnik Plain, which is the white area on the right. Scroll down to figure 2, and this is concentrating on what we're calling sometimes the snake scales, or I prefer the dragon scales. So we've got Sputnik Planum, we've got where the proposed arcology ruins are, and the locations of the dragon scales. And if we scroll down to figure 3, we can see the dragon scales, which
the Trantor City aspects of the dragon scales area of Pluto.
Yes.
Oh, look at that dramatically different terrain.
It is, isn't it?
It's so geometric.
And the dragon scales are actually mountains. So they're a sort of like a smaller version of those geometric maze-like mountain patterns on the other side of Pluto.
What was this civilization like? I mean, it's just, it boggles the mind to speculate about people that would have to build so big and so prolifically that they literally remade the surface of a planet. Well, kind of a planet. 1,500 mile across planet.
And that's exactly how it can be interpreted. You know, so we've got B1 below A, which is actually the published resolution. And there's quite, and we go to a close-up, and there's quite a bit of walled cellular geometry in 3D.
Tons. Endless. It's like the plan worked. If Pluto was put where it is in orbit to preserve it from the intense bombardment after the war when the planet fragments from blowing up Planet 5 were basically decimating the entire inner solar system. By putting Pluto in that highly inclined elliptical orbit, they saved the surface for us to see in a quasi-unruined state, although we're seeing lots and lots of destruction. But we can see the fundamental geometry underpinning all of this. This is amazing, Robert.
And of course, the thing is that the sort of resolution we're seeing here, these walls, are mountain size, ridges the size of, mountain ridges. It's huge.
But and you can tell the difference between they're rectilinear, and mountains don't form rectilinear box-like right angle patterns. Duh.
Not usually, no.
Yes, Keith?
It totally comes out of nowhere, as Will. I mean,
Will. It's Will, you're in Poughkeepsie. Why are you so distant?
There we are.
They
come out of nowhere too. It's almost like you just ride the almost what looks like could have been water there down to this area, and it's just gorgeous. It looks just like the Tranter City picture at the top. It's amazing. I've never seen this type of, especially looking over mountains, at least on Earth or Mars, where you'd have this perfect, to be able to build in that scale. Hmm. I mean, what we're looking at is amazing. And this is the best we're going to get. Is that true of this area? You're saying this is...
I don't really know the footprints, because some of the stuff coming up on the footprints has not been previewed and all that. Who knows what Stern is holding up his sleeve waiting for the right moment to reveal? Because remember, guys, and Keith, you'd agree with this is all on a clock. Somebody has a clock, and they're revealing more and more and more, building us up to the big reveal. At least that's where the trend curve seems to be going.
It really does. What's the big reveal?
That it's real. That we're not all nuts. That we're actually looking at ancient alien structures of a Type 2 civilization as far above human beings as we are above ants, in terms of what they could do.
Hey, Richard, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Well, the thing that we keep talking about is these collapsed, quote unquote, geological formations that some people might say. Well, what kind of geology would collapse inwards, expose some symmetry, have honeycombed floors? I mean, what geological and on many planets, what geological process is that?
The geology of fear, when you can't tell people the truth and you hunt around for the nearest plausible sounding explanation because you're an expert and they're not.
Exactly.
So if we just go down to the very bottom.
Very bottom. All right, remember, we're on link number 12.
Of that image.
On Radio with Pictures.
Nearer to Sputnik Plain, there are some what appear to be like arcology shells. So the centers have collapsed and they've just left exterior walls. But on a larger scale than what we were looking at Cydonia. I don't know if you can see them.
Which image are we looking at?
We're still on figure 3.
Okay, figure 3.
Very bottom.
A very bottom of figure 3. Oh, yes, look at those.
So there's a few examples I've taken out.
Now, maybe we're not looking at arcologies. We're looking at a totally different kind of architecture. Maybe the architecture when Pluto had an atmosphere and balmy breezes and spring rains and moonsets and eclipses and all that, because remember, Pluto in the model was moved out there to keep it cold and above the dust so that it would be preserved, but maybe it didn't always hang out in its current orbit. Maybe it was like a number of other objects in the Kuiper Belt. Maybe they're all artificial, at least the big ones, and that's what we're going to discover when New Horizons arrows by a Kuiper Belt object in, what, two and a half to 3 years, something like that?
Yep. Very interesting to see, because there's so many of these Kuiper Belt objects out there.
I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if we're looking in our own solar system, again, at the same kind of objects that are orbiting the Kepler star, except here we're looking from the inside out, and there we're looking from the outside, looking toward the star and seeing them eclipse if they're big enough. I mean, if something the size of what's orbiting Kepler were orbiting our solar system, we would instantly have known, because we're talking things here that are like a million miles across orbiting the Kepler star. So nothing we're seeing is on that scale, but it's certainly far above human capabilities to build architecture yet. Although I think, Robert, you'd agree we know kind of how we might do this if we had an unlimited budget.
What we're talking about, arcologies or the Dyson-type shells.
All of that. It requires an active nanotechnology where you basically tell little robots to take and put materials and do 3D printing and mine stuff from either asteroids or from the vacuum or, you know, in other words, this is a level of civilization that is so far beyond us at the moment, who have to mine stuff and melt stuff and fashion stuff and machine stuff. This was not built that way.
Well, all that makes it very difficult for us to manufacture in space, doesn't it? Which holds us back from, let's say, solar system colonization, apart from getting off the planet as well.
Well, that's why the EM drive stuff and Dave Distler and all that is important, because if the emails I've been getting about secret space programs developing 100-pound, you know, M-drive thrusters as opposed to 0.00001 pounds, then all of this becomes suddenly accessible to the human species, and every amazing technology, artifact, library, you know, packet of information out there is going to come under our scrutiny at some point, and it will transform civilization. I mean, this is the game changer, guys, we need to get ISIS off the front page where it belongs, and this on the front page where it belongs.
Well, just for ISIS to go completely away.
Well, we have to make them ideologically basically obsolete. And how do you do that? You have to present the human species, even Muslims, with what's in their book that speaks to this kind of reality. The Quran is filled with allusions that no one's understood because they speak to a cosmic reality of this scale. And I know that because Errol Torin was a Muslim when he joined the Independent Mars Investigation many decades ago and discovered the geometry in the D&M pyramid.
Ah, so you've got an inside track on the Quran.
It's called focus group, you know, testing, whatever. Keith, you're being awfully silent.
Just listening.
Okay, but, Robert, are we where?
Yes, just to mention that if people want to see, say, images A and C, any of the less close-in images, bigger, they can use a browser zoom to do that, and it works very well.
Okay.
So... that's me done, I think. Keith, now.
Keith, your floor is yours.
Well, that was very good, Bob. That was very good. It's nice to hear you expound on your stuff, man. I've always liked your dissertations.
He's very thorough and methodical and scientific, which, of course, is why we believe what he says he's seeing when he says he sees it.
Oh yeah, I've been reading Cydonia Quest since over a decade now. Very well informed. But I took what Bob started on and went a little further with it here lately. With all the CTX imagery, that they're mapping Mars at a pretty good resolution, and I short sold it just a little while ago because the resolution is 3 to 6.
Okay.
Pixels. Okay, 3-6 meter res. So you know, it varies in what it is. But if you go to Radio with Pictures and click on link number 14, which is Greater Cydonia, the Happy Hunting Grounds, you might see why I'm calling it the Happy Hunting Grounds, because I went on a foray, you know, with all the stuff around Cydonia. I was wondering, hey, you know, this is a coastline, and this coast goes all the way around Mars.
Yeah.
The same level of land around this coast goes all the way around Mars, except for certain places where, you know, volcanism or whatever has wiped it out totally. The coastlines are pretty intact. The northern part of the planet didn't get as bombarded as the southern part, obviously.
No. Nope.
It just got washed away. But if you're on happy hunting grounds and you look, I went to the west of Cydonia proper. I went to the east of Cydonia proper. And I looked at all the little mesas and all the stuff from one side to the other. And I've come up with Cydonia. Greater Cydonia is more than 500 miles long. Hmm. It runs along the whole Acidalia, Cydonia.
So it was kind of like the Boss Wash Corridor on North America. You know, you have basically city. When you look down from the space station at night, it's basically city from Washington to Boston.
Well, they reach out. These arcology areas reach out into Acidalia as well. Mm-hmm. And as the further they get out into Acidalia, you see that they're all on platforms. If you're on the Happy Hunting Grounds page on my website, and if you look at picture one, this thing is relatively close to Cydonia proper, mm-hmm. but this is a four-sided pyramid in anyone's book.
With the right side looking like a clap because of a big tsunami.
Exactly. Well, if you go there, I've got all these pictures on this page. Now, in my foray, looking for these curious shapes, and, you know, I'm looking for pyramids, I'm looking for tetrahedrons, I'm looking for collapsed arcologies, I'm looking for stuff that looks like Cydonia proper. I found 95 different items. I've got 17 of them on this page.
Hmm.
Okay, I've got 17 of them on this page, but I found 95, and I'm in the process of going through and ordering high-rise images of all these areas, because this is all unexplored territory.
Totally. You remember back in Monuments when I talked about the northern side of the basin on which Cydonia sits, and I mused wistfully that someday we'd get a spacecraft that would take those images and we would be able to see what we could see like we had seen at the Lower Cydonia region? Now it's time. Now they're doing it in part. And yes, if you fill up the request channels with all the Cydonia stuff, they have to do something. They can't just not do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's all kind of stuff. If you look, there's pyramid after pyramid after pyramid, tetrahedron, pyramid, arcology. If you look down this page, there's 17 images on it. I'm sure there's something there that will trick your trigger. Number nine does it for me. If you look at it, it's a platform, and it has three pyramids on it.
Oh, look at that. Isn't that cool?
You can click on all these, and it brings up larger images,
Do you think that crater just north of the center arcology was an attempted strike?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what it was. I've noticed also, look around, even on this page, look at how many of these have a crater hole either on them or right beside them.
The remnants of the war.
It totally looks like a war. It's war-torn. This is amazing.
See, this is how I got Brandenburg into this, because the first conversation we had, John and I, you know, he's this nuclear physicist, plasma background, all that, Sandia Labs, right credentials, the right interest. He was really excited about this. I said, John, is there a way we can measure the depth to size ratio and differentiate based on what we see in the Viking images between impact craters, asteroids, whatever, from nuclear weapons craters? And that's what got John totally interested in the whole idea of an ancient nuclear war on Mars. And now what's he doing? He's publishing about an ancient nuclear war on Mars.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kind of stuff. And I know if you look at number four on here, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's a whatever you might think it is, but look at number four.
Looking at number four. Looking. Oh, there we are. Oh, my God, that looks like a nascent. Nah. Could it be?
I'm not saying anything.
It might be. It's just, folks, we're looking at the outstanding example of the evening of Paradoia, better known as another mesa that looks like maybe a very eroded face.
Now, Richard, you know as well as anybody here amongst us group, and I don't know how many people out there in Radio Land know, but I don't look for those.
No. In fact, I try not to see it because I'm so, you know, if it weren't for the math around the face on Mars, we would never have done any of this. So,
well, this one, that one happens to sit in a particular area with geometric relationships and other mesas and arcologies, just like over in Cydonia. Hmm. But I'm not saying it's anything. I'm just saying that it might be an arcology. It sure is an interesting little structure there. And like all the rest of them, its northeastern side is also collapsed.
Yep. By the way, I thought that maybe our offending body of water that did all the damage at Sidonia was right there. You know, the pond between southern Sidonia and northern Sidonia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bob's Super Bowl city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now beginning to think that a lot of water came rolling in from some other place.
Yeah, and well, if you're looking, you have this planet that's spinning along on its axis, and then all of a sudden you have planet V explodes and knocks it all out of kilter. Well, what if the orbit of this planet just slows almost, you know, imperceptibly? The ocean's going to slip and go all over the whole planet. And that's probably what happened.
Well, when you blow up a planet.
Yeah, it was a reverberation effect. It got bombarded from the south, and then everything in the north decided to spill out of its boundaries.
Yep. No, see, that's what the question I was going to get back to before, which is, if we're looking at these huge, massive arcologies, is it possible, gentlemen, that the reason for building these huge, contained mega cities was because Mars, when they were built, no longer could support people outside? In other words, we're looking at post-catastrophe number one, and they succumbed to catastrophe number two, which is what Van Plandern talks about roughly in the 3.2 million year time frame. Remember, he's talking two explosions?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look, I noticed something strange while going over the, you know, the CTX images give you the broadest.
Now, the CTX
context.
Images are the context images,
mm-hmm. Of high-rise camera.
Abbreviated CTX for context,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is kind of an auxiliary instrument to the high-rise, super high-res camera to give you context for the higher-res images, which will look like postage stamps set in the middle of the much bigger context image.
Correct. But I noticed as I was going along, you know, that that all these, you know, they're setting out into the ocean, but what used to be an ocean. But if you look, there's an area called Sidonia Labyrinthus, and there's a couple areas like it that are along the coast. They're further out as if the water was receding, and they dug channels so that they could still access the ocean from these arcologies.
Mm.
That's what it looks like. I mean, you know, the classic, you know,
canal. I was going to say your classic Lowell Burrows scenario.
These are so small. I mean, they're not small in scale, but as far as seeing them with a telescope, good.
From
luck.
Earth, no, no.
No, they never did. No, yeah. These are not the canali they theorized.
But remember,
these are just
I noticed. Remember, we're looking at fractals. What they did on a small scale of the size you're talking about, which is only small because it's just a few miles, I remember a calculation that Lowell did once that the width of the canals to be seen in his 24-inch telescope there at Lowell on Mars Hill that Robin and I got a chance to actually look through at Mars Opposition in 2003. That telescope, the smallest line-like feature that it could see with the human eyeball at the eyepiece end with the highest magnification, 1,500 times, would be about 30 miles in width. So we're not seeing things on that scale. We're seeing things much, much tinier. But again, if they had to, after the catastrophe, if they had to bring water from someplace on Mars through engineering, that's what you'd expect to see, right?
That's exactly what I mean, and I didn't expect to see that. I just, you know, as I was going along, I saw, you know, I'd always known that Sidonia Labyrinthus was there, and that it was a bunch of channels cut that looked like a maze,
mm-hmm.
in the surface. But and the context imager, with all the images mapped out, gives you the ability to see how those relate to the actual mesas and these things here that are, you know, that are sticking up. You know, off of these platforms, and they're related to them. They point toward them. They go toward them. They run around them. It's really strange. I didn't really, you know, have time to detail it or anything. And maybe that's for the future, because this is a great big area, and we're just now getting into this unexplored territory, and it's full of stuff. It's amazing.
Well, the more people, why don't you walk through for the audience? Because we might as well have company. Anybody listening to us anywhere on the planet tonight can send NASA a request to take pictures of anything on Mars with this super telescope pointing down, the so-called high-rise camera. So, Keith, why don't you walk them through how they do this? Because it's really, really simple. And the more people we get requesting, the more the odds go up we're going to actually get stuff back.
It's the HiWISH program. Just if you search Google for HiWISH, you'll come up with it.
Spell. High-dash.
High, H-I, wish.
W-I-S-H.
Yep, High Wish.
Okay.
And it's an extension program, and you have to register. And then when you register, you can go in there, and there's a map, and there's a targeting, there's a footprint tool where you can target specific areas. It really helps if you've got a good geographical knowledge of Mars. It really helps if you know the coordinate system and know where to and know how to transfer coordinates between your scouting things such as Google Earth or what at Google Mars and the map that's on the High Wish site. You know, it's not something that just a novice really can jump right in and do. It'll take a little bit of study, but it's really rewarding to know that you've taken a picture on another planet. You've reached out from your computer that you've got there, and you've asked for something to be commanded that's going around another planet, and it takes a picture of it and sends it back to you. To me, that is just that. That's it. That is awesome.
We are on two planets tonight, Earth and Mars, the ancient Mars, the Mars of the Disney film, the incredibly deprecated, totally undersold, totally mismanaged, amazing Disney film John Carter was actually talking about. And we'll do a program on that, I guarantee you. My guests this morning, Keith Laney, Andrew Curry, Will Farrer, and Bob Harrison, we're talking about the ancients of Sidonia and beyond. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight. Keith, you're taking us back to Mars. Which number are we looking at on your strip now?
Well, the first 12 images on the page are all Sidonia.
Okay.
But I want to go down to the bottom four that are on this, and it's image number 14 through 17.
Got it.
The very bottom strip. And these are from various other areas around the coast of this ocean, this northern ocean on Mars. Mm. Along the same coastal dichotomy, just in different areas. Number 14 is from Arcadia, and it's a four-sided pyramid. Number 15 is from Elysium, and it's a football arcology. Look at it.
It sure does look like. Now, 16, look. You know what 16 is?
It's a tetrahedron.
It's a ReLU tetrahedron.
Well, and you know what?
We have to tell people what we're talking about. And we should actually put the mathematical thing up, which we can't do tonight because there's no time. But
we have a ReLU tetrahedron coming up next after we get it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like I say, it's a tetrahedron. And, you know, these tetrahedrons are all over the place. And I challenge you to go on Google Earth, search through any mountain range on Earth, in any desert you want to search, and you find me groups of tetrahedrons like we're on Mars, mm-hmm. and I'll talk to you about natural explanations for these. But as of now, there is none. Number 17.
Mm. Can you say splat?
Hey, this is something. We'll probably get an image from this from High Rise fairly quick because that is an extremely interesting impact.
Now, where was this shot?
That, I believe, is not far east of Sidonia, out in the plain that's north of Deuteronomus, I think.
Okay. Now, you remember the crater and the weird pyramid and the funny geometry on the rim of that crater in Deuteronomus, which I put in monuments?
Mm-hmm.
We need an MRO shot of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm getting around to targeting, you know, a whole lot of this stuff. It would be nice to have some help doing this. Not a whole lot of people actually order these images for the purposes that
okay, if people want to be walked through this process, get hold of Keith. He's got ample web links on his bio tonight on othersideofmidnight.com. He will instruct you how to go through this because the more citizens of the world demand to see the best imagery taken of these remarkable ancient structures, the more the odds are politically that we will get what we are demanding.
Sure, it's a feedback loop. And if they know that, you know, they have websites and they put these pictures out and they check their hits just like everybody else does, and they want those to go up. And the more people that are looking, the more people that are participating, the more their program's successful. And it's a feedback loop. It's like anything else. You get out of it what you put in.
Richard, I'll go ahead and I'd make a video on how to do that and send that out. I'm always asking. People are asking me all the time, what can I do to help? What can I do
terrific.
To help?
Well, people need a kind of a, you know, how-to, you know, kind of a do-it-yourself manual for how to do this and get better at doing this and, you know, get caught. Don't get caught in the noise. Don't get caught in the things that look like little mousies running around. They're not real. Geometry, 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 and the scale is superhuman. The scale is Marvel Universe scale.
Sure is. And, you know, the real stuff is so much more fascinating. The story it tells is so much more rich than a little mousy or a crab going in a hole that's Photoshopped.
Let's go to the Candor Tetrahedron.
Yeah, sure enough. Okay, go back to Radio with Pictures.
Mm-hmm. Click on 16. Mm-hmm.
And,
this is so cool. Keith, this is so cool.
Isn't it?
Where are we going?
Okay, you can see the first two images is where we first noticed this on the mock images back in the day. And that's about both of those, one of them I think is a 5-meter res. One of them is a 3-meter res. And they first pointed us to it, said, hey, look, there's something here that needs to be looked at. But due to, you know, those images had to be grossly enlarged to actually see it that size. So, you can't really count on what you're
seeing. Well, the thing that leaps out at me when I saw it the first time, and I think a guy named Will Faust pointed it out to me, is it's a relu tetrahedron, meaning it's a tetrahedron, but the corners are curved. That's what makes a relu tetrahedron unique. And it appears to be eroding out of stuff on top of it, so it was preserved. It was basically buried, so it didn't suffer erosion, a lot of erosion. And the geometry and the symmetry on this photograph said to me, holy cow. So we waited with bated breath until
I ordered pictures of it from Hi-Rise. And they came. And this is a wonderful thing. It goes back to that Hi-Wish program. Once you have done the work and you've targeted something nice that you wanted to see and it comes back, you're hooked. You're hooked from then on.
How many people in history have ever commanded a spacecraft to take an image of an extraterrestrial civilization artifact on another planet? Come on.
There you go. That's my point entirely. But in the result, this is the kind of things you get. I've had people ask me, well, Keith, how do you find so much cool stuff? And the secret is not finding the whole lot. I've been doing this a long time. I know where to look. I've scouted. I've done the homework.
He knows Mars like the back of his hand.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, I'll guarantee you, you can probably show me pretty much just about any general random image of someplace on Mars, and I'll have a good idea about on the planet where it's at. That's simply from years and years of looking at this. But I got a theory. When I collect these things, you know, I liken it to collecting seashells on the seashore. If you walk along and you pick up every seashell that you think is, oh, this is pretty, oh, this is pretty, oh, this is pretty, and you get back, you've just got a mediocre collection. But if you go by and you pick up this one and you look at it, nah, and you throw it away because it's not that great, but it's okay, not that great,
okay.
Throw it away. Keep the good one.
Time is fidgeting, so.
Okay,
Candor.
That's how you do it. You keep your good ones like this, and this is one that got kept like that. This is a good shell. When you look at this, the image that we've got, it's the fourth one on the fourth pyramid image on the page. It's a black and white. It's in the bottom left corner. You can see that the image was taken so that this corner of the pyramid is featured. In other words, the camera was taken off. The spacecraft was off nadir when it took this picture. It was about 26 degrees to one side. So it gives us a good view down on this corner.
So they tilted it sideways to catch this thing closer to the horizon than not passing directly over.
When you order stereo images, one of them is going to be they're going to be like that. They'll take two images, and one will be from one side, one will be the other. That way they can make an anaglyph from it. And that was ordered as stereo. But if you scroll down a little bit, and you'll see image number 5 on the page.
Okay.
It's a long strip showing down the corner.
Oh, yes.
Because that image is a 25-centimeter res, and for some reason, maybe the atmosphere was really clear that day or whatever, but it took a stunning clear picture.
Oh, my God, look at that.
Mm-hmm. That is an exposed corner. But whatever flood it was that came through here or whatever took off this corner of the pyramid, and you can see the structural blocks and everything. You can see openings up in it. Look toward where the pyramid meets the ground at the bottom of the image.
Yep.
And you'll see what I'm talking about. That is constructed.
Look at that incredible straight line. That must be hundreds of feet long, and it's got stuff rising up above it at that corner.
Exactly. Well, if you look on the apex, there is something built on the apex.
Yeah, I'm going to have an interesting disagreement with you and Andrew, but let's not do the disagreement until we get to Andrew, because Andrew did an amazing job.
Sure.
Keep going, Keith.
Well, look, this is a pyramid in any sense of the word.
The whole big thing is a pyramid.
This is a pyramid, yeah. Yes. This is, and no telling what was the purpose of this pyramid, because we don't have a handle on what this civilization was, what their customs were, what they, you know, it could be a tomb, it could be a monument, it could be somebody's house, okay? the thing about this is, though, if you were a civilization and you built wonderful, big, huge, geometric things like this, I would adorn it with art. There would be sculpture all over. Oh, look at Egypt. Look at Egypt. You know, go look at the Temple of Luxor. You go to the front of it.
Well, you know that if Trump built it, it would have his picture on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, given that we're talking about, you know, this is a pyramid made from a former civilization, I wouldn't start out looking for things that would particularly be art, but that would not preclude me from noticing something if it was obviously sitting there.
Okay, so image number 5 in your strip, which is, and let's make sure that we don't lose people, let's make sure they're clicking. You want to go to...
if you click on number 5, it's a huge image.
Well, they have to go to 16 on Radio with Pictures, the Candor Tetrahedron. Click on that. That takes you to this page of the Candor Tetrahedron that Keith has prepared. You scroll down to image number 5. That starts at the apex, the very top, on that tilted image, and scrolls all the way down to the base. And then if you go further down, number 6, that's Andrew's model, his painting, his sketch of what he sees at the apex. Andrew, that's your cue.
Yeah, well, I know... we had some disagreements about this, Richard, but when Keith pointed this out to me, first of all, when he sent me this image, I just about wet my pants. And then when he said, Andrew, have a look at that corner. And, you know, I looked in there and I enhanced, you know, some of the imagery myself just to pull out some of the details. And I understand pareidolia and, you know, making something out of, you know, nothing. This is not only happening once, seeing some kind of face. This is not only happening twice, not just 3 times, but from what I can tell, 4 times. And if you look at the image that I did, and you look at there's a face, and you can compare it side by side with number 7, and you can see a face literally looking up to the heavens.
Now, the real image is on the left in number 7. The real, and your sketch is number right, same scale.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that tips me is that not only are we seeing geometry and symmetry, but we're now seeing what I think is, you know, possibly totems, you know, like a symbolic representation of a people. And one of the things that I notice, like in what I'm calling the eyes of this face that's staring up to the heavens, is just like on Mount Rushmore. I mean, listen to my model. That the eyes of the presidents are scooped out, and then there's like a piece of rock put in there to pick up a glint for, you know, a pupil or like a highlight. But you can see if you go really close on Keith's image, there's 2 eyeballs in the irises scooped out.
Which is the image on the left, number 7, the comparison. The actual high-rise image is the one on the left.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, I've brought this out more, but I personally think we're seeing something, you know, pretty stunning here and spooky.
Well, if you have a culture which built the face, you know, almost 2 miles from top to bottom, staring up into space to tell somebody something, if you have a culture, if you have art, if you have a civilization, if you have, you know, the kind of synoptic view of the universe that intelligent, conscious beings have put together in their entire metaculture, representations of important symbols or individuals or people or whatever that were critical to that society would be endemic to the big stuff they built. I mean, look at Abu Simbel. Look at what Ramses did at Abu Simbel.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. When I'm, you know, I've had this image, I've had these high-rise images of this thing for quite some time, and I've looked up and down and looked up and down, and I've said, no, this is not what it looks like. No, it couldn't be. And then you look at it again, you look at it again. If it's pareidolia, you can see against it. This is something structural. These things are actually made, and they're laying there. Now, of course, this area has seen, you know, no telling. If you look on the apex of this pyramid, there is a pedestal or something on there. Maybe this was on top. Maybe at one time, this is a great big head that sat on top of a pedestal, on the top of this thing.
This looks to me like a tetrahedral pedestal on top of the Relu tetrahedral arcology. And on one side of that tetrahedral pedestal, on the very apex, they actually may have three faces on each of the three sides.
Mm. Yeah, the main face that he's taken out, that's right under the apex. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, it's two. There's one on the left and there's one on the right, and they're sharing a center eyeball. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like sort of like if you saw Riddick, you remember the necromancers? How that guy had the face and another face and another face. They shared the eyes, but it was three faces. This is the sort of, you know, this is macabre art, and that's the kind of stuff that we kind of expect.
This is very Lovecraftian.
Well, on architecture of this type, that is exactly the type of art that I would expect.
And for, Richard,
you know, yeah, Andrew.
Sorry, Keith. And again, going back to Knowles, your interview with Knowles, when I was rendering this, and again, I had a fellow email me and ask me, "Are you really seeing this stuff, or are you just kind of making it up?" And again, I'm saying, look, I know I'm a pretty creative person, but this stuff is here. You can even see structures off that face off the right. You can see some kind of girders, or it looks to me, I emphasize them again, like in the chin area, there's lines. There's like these lines holding this, you know, barely holding this stuff up. But this stuff is almost Kirby-like. Again.
Yes, very.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you click on it,
which of course opens up
five.
The question, how the hell did Jack Kirby know what was there before we ever went?
Yeah.
Well, if you click on image number 5, it brings up a gigantic full res version of that corner.
Clicking on number 5.
Okay. And don't worry about it, you're not going to bog down my server.
Okay. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Look at that detail you teased out of that.
Yeah. Well, the detail is there. That's a native resolution image.
That is stunning geometry. That's structural geometry on that corner. In fact, look at all the interior honeycombs and rooms and crevices. Well,
do you see the corner proper that comes down? It looks like it's a beveled shape that looks sort of like a roof, maybe, you know?
You mean the dark wedge at the very bottom?
Well, if you look up that corner, the actual the crown of the corner, it looks like it's a separate structure.
At the very well, it looks like it has had a covering or a casing on it. And the casing has been ripped away.
If you look down to where the big block is that's sticking out of the side, that has there's a big opening under it. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if maybe that's an opening that goes all the way up through that corner.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Toward the apex. Yeah. Well, see, we can only speculate about things like that now. But the thing about it is we have these images. This is indisputable to me. Face or art or not, it's a freaking pyramid, guys. You know, and it's a marvelous example. One of the best that we're going to find. One of the best.
Well, on the other side, on the sunlit side, I forget which image it is. You can actually see the blocks of the casing stones.
You can on this image that we're looking. Just look right past the apex. You see all that bright stuff right there in the geometric layout.
Yep.
That's the casing stone. They litter. If you look around this pyramid, these casing stones on the missing side, they're littering the ground around it.
Yep. Okay, gentlemen, we have about 5 minutes left. Anybody want to start summarizing? In other words, we're looking at individual pieces. We're looking at ancient structure, ancient architecture, ancient geometry. Big picture, what does it mean? Have we got enough data yet to begin to piece together epochs and eras? Can we group architecture by it had to have happened before something happened or after something happened, and we're looking at separate eras in these satellite images?
Oh, I'm almost sure that we are. And the thing about it is that it's like in all archaeology, we just have pieces and a whole great big long empty history to fill it in, you know. the filling those up is going to be the hard part, because how do you string together that which is an unknown chain? You know.
Will?
But the good thing about it is we do have clues on it, and it's looking better every day.
Will, I think we really need that video to show people how to get high-rise stuff and how to process it or begin to process it when they get it, if they get it from NASA.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get that for it. I think that's a great idea, and I need to set up an account myself anyway, so what I'll do is I'll just film it just like I do the couple YouTube videos we have up.
Okay.
I just film my screen doing it, so and put it up, and I'll send it along to you guys if you guys want to post on your Facebooks, on your pages, once I get the URL. I'll do that in the next couple of days.
Okay.
I think that's definitely something that'll be wonderful to send out, because there's more people knocking on the door. They're going to have to listen.
Andrew, big picture thoughts on this.
Well, again, I think it's all about, Richard, what you were talking about the other night about we don't need permission from CNN or from some school or from some scientists. We can do this ourselves. We need a little guidance, and we need to help one another, you know, maybe not make the mistakes we've made or find the bigger picture, but we need to do it, all of us.
Amen. Amen. Robert.
Well, I just say that the world of anomalous imagery from outer space is nowhere near drying up. I'm sure if high-rise keeps going, we'll find more things that look like ruined cities, more things that look like collapsed arcologies. So I'm really looking forward to the future.
Hmm. Keith, you've been looking all over the planet. Have you found any more Candor tetrahedrons, or is this really kind of a one-of-a-kind?
If you look, I mean, the page that we were just going over, the Happy Hunting Grounds page, mm-hmm. That has about four tetrahedrons on it that are in the Cydonia area. And there's more. They're scattered all over the planet. I told you I found 95 different anomalous items going along this coastline. I've shown 17. So yeah, there's a lot of them.
Okay. Yeah, Andrew, when it comes to doing imagery and artwork, the one thing we didn't do tonight, guys, we didn't bring up any of the lunar imagery.
Oh,
remember, I wanted to do a comparison between the Apollo and the Surveyor, and somehow that didn't get into the half hour, the last half hour, because nobody put it up there, you know. So We will save that for next time. But this revolution in imaging, Keith, you've noticed basically a change in the quality of what they're releasing. They're not doing any JPEGing now at all.
Well, the high-rise images won't have that anyway. I always – I don't use the JPEG 2000 images that they have online with the viewers. I download the whole great big, you know, gigabyte and a half image and work with those, but you know, not everybody can do that, and so the other methods are acceptable too. You know, you want to use HiView and cut little pieces out of it, interesting things you find, that's fine. You know, but the thing about this is though, this camera is so high resolution that it's nearly impossible to destroy the images. I don't have to resize any of them, anything. You know, a 25 centimeter res image, what am I going to have to resize that for? There's no reason whatsoever. You can see every element that's in them. You know, maybe zoom in a little bit, but the quality is so much better now than it used to be. You were there with us you were there with me in the day, Richard. You remember when opening up, going and getting mock images was just such a chore. I mean, getting the Viking images, oh God, what a chore. The Pathy images, what a chore. Now every day we get fresh updated Curiosity images. We get images coming down the pike from high rise that are 25 centimeter res and pointed at all the cool stuff we're asking to see.
But what's interesting is that publicly, in terms of the viral videos we're talking about at the top of the show and that Will, you know, basically very classily debunked, they're directing people to look at the wrong stuff. They're not directing them to look at the really cool stuff that's there, that's real, that's engineering, that's an ancient culture. They're directing them to look at the fakes. How do we get around the fake problem?
Well, how stupid would they look for putting a little pareidolia article up beside a picture of this tetrahedron in an article?
Yes.
How stupid would they look putting their little pareidolia article up beside the city ruins beside the DNM? they would look like fools. So they don't. They're straw manning. Hmm. They're straw manning.
We got about 2 minutes left. Andrew, I want to ask you a cultural art question. As an artist, as someone who's dealt in the art, using artist therapy, getting into the consciousness, the brain configuration, the gestalt, when you see the right piece of art, it resonates. Did you get the dark feeling from these effigies, these potential images, that maybe the culture that did this was kind of looking after a major catastrophe? That's why the imagery is so dark?
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Keith has talked about this being a death culture, and that's a, you know, sitting at the top of such a massive pyramid, these honestly death, almost devil-like images, they're either warnings or they're celebrations, in my opinion, and they are definitely representations of an ancestry, of a mythic past, or, you know, some sense of a people. And whether it's a scouting of, hey, this is a warning of what we've done to ourselves, or it's a celebration of something darker. I'm not sure. Either way, I'm not sure.
Well, you come back to, how did Mars derive the cultural idiom of being the planet of war?
Yes.
Where did that come from? I mean, you know, the usual mainstream flip answer is, oh, Mars is red and blood is red, and therefore the ancients thought Mars was red because it was bloody because of war. You know, idiots.
And fire, yeah.
This legacy, these stunning artifacts that have iconography, that's what's giving us another window into, I'm really voting, guys, that even though the scale of this is humongous and amazing, this is not the original Type 2. This is the surviving culture putting its pieces together after the Type 2 was destroyed. And yes, Andrew, I think they look back in shock and horror. And I don't know whether they celebrated, but they certainly were fearful of and warning of what happened and could happen again. Don't everybody speak at once.
Did the show go off?
Well, we have 30 seconds left.
You nailed it, Richard.
Okay. Yeah. Let's love to everybody.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank my guests this morning, Keith Laney, Andrew Curry, Will Farrer, and Bob Harrison. Way over there across the pond, Bob, you did a stunning job this morning. Thank you so much for your analysis. What I want to do is I want to do this periodically so we can keep everyone up to date on the status of imaging as NASA reveals more and more of the real solar system. Well, this is Saturday. We're off for the next couple of days. But same time, same bat channel, next Tuesday morning, we're going to go the other side of space. We're going to talk about how we can actually get there in a reasonable period of time. So until then, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning.